Kelly,
Grandma read us a story.
You want a story?
Yes.
You want a story, Kelly? Okay, listen, Grandma will probably read you a story, okay? I'm sure she will. But why don't you get the other kids outside, okay? Go outside and see if they want to come inside, and Grandma will read a story, okay? All right, go get them.
Right, left, right,
Grandma, and okay, kids, come on. Get in here, hurry. Awesome. We're going to get Grandma to tell us a story. Grandma!
Yes?
The kids want you to come in here and tell a story. You got time?
How about reading a story, not just telling a story?
Reading a story, that sounds good.
Alright, if everybody's kind of quiet, gather around and I'll read a story.
Fantastic, here we go.
Hi, boys and girls. Remember yesterday that Jesus and his disciples were getting ready for the Passover. And Judas, remember, he's the one who betrayed Jesus and he sold him out for 30 pieces of silver. I bet that he was kind of uncomfortable, not knowing whether the others suspected his treason. But he made a big show of loyalty. So he took the couch next to Jesus. As they all took their places, Jesus seemed more solemn than usual, as if something was troubling him. It was hard to believe that, but a little while before he had been the center of the great scene in the temple, healing the sick, turning over the table of the money changers, and hearing the children call him the Son of David. Something was troubling him, and it was not that he knew only a few hours remained before he would be arrested and crucified. He was worried about these friends of his and how little they seemed to understand of all he had tried to teach them. They were still expecting him to set up an earthly kingdom and still scheming who would be the greatest in it. Each one wanted to be prime minister or treasurer, and it wasn't going to be like that at all. To Jesus, it seemed very, very sad that they should be thinking thoughts like these when their little world was about to fall apart. What else could he do then to make them see that they must be humble and unselfish, or they would never see his kingdom at all? There was one more thing he could do, and he decided to try it. Rising from his couch, he took a towel, poured water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, probably beginning with Judas, who sat next to him. One of the group should have attended to this before the meal began, but no one willing to do this. There was too much pride in their hearts. Now, amazed, they saw their master, their lord, their king, doing this humblest of duties. Peter couldn't stand it. When Jesus came to him, he cried, "You shall never wash my feet." "If I do not wash you," said Jesus, "you have no part with me." At this, Peter answered, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." "This was not necessary," Jesus said, though I feel sure he loved Peter for saying it. Then he continued his work till he had washed the feet of all. After he had returned to his couch, he spoke very plainly. "Do you know what I have done to you?" he asked. "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you." Then looking earnestly from one to another, he said very solemnly, "Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." This was the hardest lesson Jesus ever taught, the hardest to remember, the hardest to follow. Maybe you and I need to learn it today. That meal in the upper room is called the Last Supper, and so it was. These 13 people never ate together again. In a sense, it was a farewell party. Jesus knew it was, even if the others didn't. He saw that in a very little while they would all be scattered like sheep, being chased by wolves. This was their last peaceful time together, and he wanted them to remember it always. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And here at this final meeting with his followers, the tender compassion of the king was seen in all its beauty and gentleness. The Bible said, as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to his disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sin. I tell you, I shall not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Never before had he spoken so clearly about his death, or how it would bring forgiveness of sins to many. Years afterwards, as the disciples thought about what had happened that night, they saw that the breaking of the bread was a symbol of the breaking of his body on the cross, that the cup of wine he gave them to drink was a symbol of the blood he shed on Calvary. That is why his followers have shared bread and wine together ever since. These simple things have become two sacred symbols of the Christian faith. When the Apostle Paul tried to tell the church of Corinth what happened at the farewell party, he said, "The Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, also the cup, after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" Notice how Jesus spoke of both the bread and the wine as being in remembrance of him. He wanted them to remember him always. Today, the same symbols are to help us to remember him until he comes. One of the sweetest things Jesus did that night was to offer the bread and wine to Judas. Full well he knew what Judas had done, yet he said to him as to all the others, "Remember me." It was enough to soften the hardest heart, but Judas had gone too far. By and by, Jesus startled everyone at the table by saying, "One of you will betray me." They couldn't believe it. They thought he must be mistaken. Each one wondered whether at any time he had said or done anything that might get the master into trouble. One by one, they asked him, "Lord, is it I?" He wouldn't answer. So Peter beckoned to John, who was next to Jesus, to find out who was the traitor. John whispered to Jesus, "Lord, who is it?" Softly, Jesus replied, "It is he to whom I shall give this morsel when I have dipped it." When Jesus had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas. At this moment, Judas, who had kept silent till now, joined the others in asking, "Master, is it I?" No doubt he thought he would take suspicion off himself by doing so. But Jesus answered him, "You have said so," which is another way of saying yes. Then Jesus whispered to Judas, so the others could not hear, "What you are going to do, do quickly." At this, Judas rose and went out, and it was night. The others thought that Jesus had asked him to go and buy something for the feast, or to give something to the poor. Jesus did not call his disciples to the upper room just to eat the Passover. He had something else in mind as well. He knew that this would be his last chance to talk with them all together. There was so much he wanted to say before he left them. After the meal was over and Judas had gone out into the night, the rest gathered closer about their beloved master. In the dim light of the little table lamps on the table, they listened with growing sadness as he spoke his last loving words of counsel and cheer. "Little children," he said to them, "yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me. Where I am going, you cannot come." Fancy calling these grown men little children. Yet that is what they were to him. He loved them as if they were his own dear boys, and it made him sad to think that, like lost children looking for their mother or father, they would search for him after his crucifixion and not find him. Then he gave them some good advice, the best advice any father could give to his children. "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." So remember that, children, that Jesus said, "The greatest commandment is to love your God and love his people." Maybe you want to repeat those words. Love your God and love your people. Keep that in your heart always. Of all the beautiful things Jesus said, this is perhaps the loveliest. One another and love your people. Be kind to one another. Be forgiving to one another. Be tender-hearted to one another. Be thoughtful of one another's needs forget one another's faults. This would be the badge of his followers. They wouldn't need to wear a gold pin or some special kind of cap or gown or collar. Through all the years to come, anywhere, anytime, the true Christians would be known by their love. Love for God and love for our people. Love shown in tender words and kindly deeds. By this shall all men know you belong to me. How much this means. If we don't love our brothers and sisters in Christ, the brothers and sisters of our race, we don't belong to him. If we don't treat them as Jesus would treat them, we are not his disciples, and we're not Christians. There's something to think about, isn't it? At this point, Peter broke in to say that he loved Jesus so much that he would follow him always. I will lay down my life for you, he said. Remember, it's very easy when things are going good to say that I will love you always, I will do this and I will do that. But sometimes when things get going hard, sometimes it's hard to love him or to follow him or to witness. So don't always be judgmental of somebody else because you don't know what you would do. But remember this always, that the true sign of a true Christian is love God and love his people. Jesus said to Peter, will you? Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times. Peter was silent. He couldn't understand what Jesus meant. Why, he would never deny his master. Never. Certainly not that very night. Meanwhile, Jesus went on to talk about his return and how someday he would come back and gather all his dear followers to him and take them to his Father's house. But soon he was back on the subject of love. There would be no mansion for anybody who did not have love in his heart. And love is shown by keeping his commandments. If you love me, he said, keep my commandments. Again, if a man loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. What a sweet thing for Jesus to say. The great God of heaven will make his home with any man or woman, boy or girl, in whose heart true, unselfish love is to be found. It may be hard to understand, but it is true, and it just shows how God prizes love above everything else in the world. So remember, boys and girls, every day keep that in your heart. Love your God and love your people. Love you. See you tomorrow.
You brought your precious baby home and have done everything you can to give her the best care possible. Is she healthy? Does she get plenty of hugs and kisses? You know how important it is. But it doesn't stop when she turns 18. She is in the global minority. How will you protect her in the future? She'll have an even tougher time protecting her own children. The growing threat against white people is real, and hatred against whites is escalating. Don't forget to prepare your children for the dark days ahead, because it will be the love of thousands of mothers that will rekindle the desire for survival. Our children are too precious. Courageous moms can make the difference between life or death for our people. This message brought to you by the White Women's Perspective.
Hello, this is KKK Radio.
30 years from now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal. And equal men are not free. Make your choice today with a night's party at KKK.com.
As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, if properly used. Liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of our life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country. Personal liberty is looked upon as the crowning achievement of the people. It is a anything goes mentality. Excesses and fetishes of all sorts are applauded and promoted. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Tommy Freedom and the Freedom Forum right here.